Hey, hey, Heat Nation! Welcome back to Heat is Gonna Heat. I'm your host, Kyle Russell, still here to chat a little about our favorite NBA team, Miami Heat. As we are approaching All-Star break later on this week, it's hopefully a little bit of a shorter episode. Got three games to go over from last week. Still a positive week for Miami. Went 2-1. Good there. Can hold on to that. And then we'll go over what happened at the trade deadline. Not much to go over there. That's why this will be a little bit quicker. A quick run about the buyout market, just do some stuff on that. And then, as usual, look ahead, only two games this week with the break coming up. And that should do it. So, let's just jump right on in, going into last week's games. Again, Miami going 2-1 over the last week, bringing their overall record to 28-25. Still staying above 500. Can hold on to that, at least. We go back first to last Tuesday's game against the Orlando Magic, a game that Miami won 121-95, although it was a little bit closer than you would have liked it to be given that final score. But to go through the injury report real quick, Miami was healthy, like completely, and as you'll see by the end of this podcast, that did not last very long. But also interesting to see that the Magic were healthy as well. Very similar situation to Miami, just cannot stop being injured, and big reason why they're both, you know, the 7-8 seed in the play-in right now. But back through the game, going through the recap now, Heat got out to an early 11-point lead and held the Magic to just 19 points in the first quarter and a 7-point lead afterwards, Miami scoring 26 themselves. Heat extended their lead to 20 about halfway through the second quarter, but the Magic went on a 16-3 run near the end of the half. Miami only up 7 again. I think the second quarter ended up being like a wash, like 30-30 or something like that. Third quarter, the Heat had their lead hovering around 7-10 points before the Heat busted things open on a 17-3 run to take a big lead again. Finished the third up 21 points, though an 11-0 run by the Magic would cut it to 10 again in the fourth quarter. And that's why I said like things started getting a little dicey again, because Magic, to their credit, did what Miami normally does, which is, let the other team get into a false insecurity and then start making a run back. So I mentioned Magic had cut it to 10, but from there is where the Heat, like, took control of the game for good, going on a 23-7 run for the rest of the game to eventually make this a blowout victory for the Heat. Player of the game for the Heat here, Jimmy Butler, 23 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 steals, on hyper-efficient 6-9 from the field dice, 2-4 from three-point range. Could have been a little bit better, 9-12 from the free throw line, but the 6-9 from the field, like, scoring, what was it, 23 points, not even taking 10 shots. I mean, that's the Jimmy Butler special right there. Though he did have 5 turnovers, but made up for that with 10 points in the fourth quarter to help bury the Magic during that large run to close out the game. Interesting stats from this game. Miami won the field goal battle going 47-87, good for 54% from the field, to the Magic's 35-80, good for 44%. So Miami actually having the double-digit field goal percentage advantage for once. Pretty much would only come against a team like the Magic. Phenomenal defense, but just as bad offense. If not, maybe a little bit better. Miami also won turnover battle 13-18, and offensive rebounding 11-8, which helps explain the extra 7 possessions that the Heat ended up getting. And they only barely lost the free throw attempt battle, Miami going 14-18 to the Magic's 15-21. So, and even then, they shot better from the free throw line. So, overall, Miami winning this game in large part just by shooting better from the field and having more attempts than the Magic. Lo and behold, that's a phenomenal formula to win a game. Mention for this, Miami now owns the head-to-head tiebreaker versus the Magic, having won the season series 3-1, meaning if we are tied with the Magic in terms of record at the end of the year, Miami gets the higher seed. That's automatically great. So, for example, last year, one of the things that ultimately buried Miami in the play-in was losing a lot of those tiebreakers. Well, losing those tiebreakers and losing the games alongside of them. But there was dwindling hope, because Miami had lost the tiebreakers against, like, the Nets and the Knicks. I can't remember who else was with them at the time, but I remember they lost those two in particular, and that doused a lot of the hope that the Heat could have gotten out of the play-in because of that. So at least here in this situation, against a Magic team that is near them in the standings, they have an edge against them should the records tie. So super beneficial, definitely worth a mention. And then the other thing for this game, interesting, was a new starting lineup for the Heat, where they seem to have gone back to having Caleb Martin as the starting four versus Hywood Highsmith now coming off the bench. And with Miami's one really, really great win of the week out of the way, let's continue on. Up next, Miami would continue a home back-to-back against the San Antonio Spurs, a game that they would win 116-104. Out for the Heat this game, Hywood Highsmith. Not because of any sort of injury that he sustained in particular, more so because of legal issues. And so, quick detour down story lane. So essentially, what we understand right now is Hywood Highsmith left the game against the Magic, and while driving away from the game late at night, going 45 and a 40, so you know, slightly above speed limit. But let's be honest, anybody that goes out in there and drives, we typically drive 5 plus over the speed limit. But while driving at night, 45 and a 40, hit a pedestrian who was trying to push a car out of the road. The one sticking point is that car, despite not working, did not have any hazards or lights on. So in that sense, I feel really bad, because I think that could have been the difference between Hywood seeing that car and being able to get out of the way and all this being avoided. But car didn't have the lights on. Hywood, slightly speeding, hits the car. The person is still alive. There was no deaths, no fatalities. That's at least some good news. But the person struck did have a partial leg amputee and, like, have fractured the other leg, so they're definitely going to be in the hospital for a while. And so, obviously, wish them all the best, speedy recovery. So, because of that, between, like, the Hywood's mental state of, you know, what he did and making sure that he's fine and any sort of banged-up injuries he would have had, coupled with the legal stuff, because at the time, like, this is still an ongoing thing. We're only getting, like, little bits of information based upon what's been vetted and is available to put out there. So because of that, though, Hywood ended up missing that game against the Spurs. Though he would not be out too long. He would be back by the Celtics game yesterday, Sunday. But back from the story, let's go back now and recap the Spurs game last Wednesday. So, in this game, very back-and-forth start broke when Miami took a solid lead on an 8-0 run, but would only be up one after the first quarter, the Spurs being just like a pest, they just would not go away. Then halfway through the second, the Spurs did take the lead on a 7-0 run, but the Heat took it back on a 7-0 run of their own, and would eventually be up two into the half, so slightly winning the second quarter. Then third quarter itself, tightly contested, with the Heat pulling away near the end, but a pair of three by the Spurs cut Miami's lead to one going into the fourth. And then the fourth itself, the Heat open up an 11-2 run to be up 10, and then a little bit later on, another 7-0 run to extend their lead to 17, but the Heat, you know, very similar fashion to what happened with the Magic, and also maybe a little bit on the second night of a back-to-back. They gave up a 10-0 run to only be up 7 with about 50 seconds left. But Heat made their free throws down the stretch to make sure that the comeback didn't happen, and ultimately walked away with, surprisingly enough, a double-digit victory. Player of the game here, I'm going to give this one actually to Tyler Hero. 24 points, 6 rebounds, 7 assists on an efficient 10 of 15 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3-point range. No free throws, though. Interesting stat I heard. Tyler Hero's not taken a free throw in all of February. A little bit of that's on him, because he's adapting his game to be more perimeter-oriented. A little bit also, I think he could get a better whistle called by the refs. But back to this, though. Only one turnover in this game against the Spurs, and only one personal foul. Set up Bam really well throughout the game. I'd probably say he finished with, what, 7 assists? Maybe 3 to 5 of them were to Bam, which is phenomenal. That, again, we want to see that growing partnership between Hero and Bam. That is our best pick-and-roll option, like, in terms of the long-term right now. And then just kept Miami in position throughout the game, and then Jimmy Butler would come in and finish off the fourth. So Tyler Hero just doing a great job throughout the game, ultimately finished with the most points as well. So, player of the game. Interesting stats for Miami in this game. They won the field goal percentage battle. Miami going 43-87, good for 49%, to the Spurs 41-90, good for 46%. So slight 3% lead to Miami, but hey, every lead is nice. They also won turnovers 10-14, won free throw attempts going 18-23 to the Spurs 10-17. Did not shoot well at all from the free throw line. And then we're doing well enough in terms of, like, about matched the Spurs with points in the paint and rebounding, which is especially interesting considering the Wembanyama advantage for the Spurs. So good of Miami to keep about steady there. And then both shot pretty poor from three, 32%. So you add it all up, and it's like there wasn't really anything that the Spurs were winning to help them in this game. And therefore, the small advantages that Miami had in a few areas were enough to eventually lead to a 12-point win. And then the honorable mentions for this, Jimmy Butler with a triple-double, 17 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. Some of the efficiency was a little meh, so that's why I ultimately gave player of the game to Tyler here, though Jimmy was the fourth quarter person that put it away. Bam Adebayo, 20 points on a pretty efficient 10 of 14, and then Jaime Jaquez Jr., finished with 10 points on good efficiency, starting to look a little bit more like the Jaquez we saw before the groin injury. So glad to see that. And that takes us to yesterday's game Sunday. Miami hosted the Boston Celtics in the game that they would lose, 106-110. Almost had another three-game win streak going. Out for this game, Jimmy Butler, who would be out due to a death in the family. Don't have any information beyond that. Just condolences to him and his family, and I put it on Twitter as well, but like, this is a good reminder of, for as much as we talk about competing and winning and the fun of basketball, like, I enjoy talking about this. I hope that you all enjoy listening to this, but at the end of the day, for these basketball players, this is just a job. It's just a game, and the most important things in life are the people that are around us. I myself am particularly sensitive, I guess, to this, I guess you could say, mainly just because I lost a grandparent a few months ago. So in that regard, I fully understand. Hey, Jimmy, yes, we would like to win these games, but go be with your family and hope everything stays well for all of them. The Heat would get Haywood Highsmith back for this game, like I mentioned earlier. So at least doesn't seem like there's any like long-term legal problems. For the recap of the game itself against the Boston Celtics, very competitive first quarter, saw the game tied at 22 late, but the Celtics scored the last 4 points to win the quarter and take a 4-point lead. The second quarter, the Celtics extended their lead to 10 on an 8-0 run. Heat clawed their way back, getting within like 2 or 3, but then the Celtics again extend their lead back up to 10 and stayed there around until the end of the half. Heat down 9 going into the halftime break. Third quarter, Celtics got an early 8-0 run to beat up 15, but a quick Heat 7-0 run cut that back to 4, though the Heat would go into the fourth quarter down 7. So they cut it down to 4, stayed it around there, Celtics extended it a little bit, but still a manageable game, again, despite not having Jimmy Butler either, and a few other players as we'll talk about in a little bit. But fourth quarter, really back and forth affair. Heat got as close as 2 points down the stretch. Tyler Hero just really busted out, and talk about him a little bit as well. But it just wasn't enough in the end, and the Heat fell by 4 points as the Celtics made their free throws. And that ends up just being that. Player of the game, Tyler Hero, team high 24 points with 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Could have been a little bit better efficiency, but for the most part, still solid. 10 of 21 from the field, 4 of 12 from three-point range. Still no free throws, only 1 turnover and 1 foul. So Hero, to his credit, has done a lot better, especially recently, about turnovers and fouling. Those have been way down. And 10 of Hero's 24 points came in the fourth quarter as they were trying to complete the comeback. So Hero, you know, taking on that Jimmy role. Hey, let me score a little bit here in the first, a little in the second, a little third, and then just empty the tank in the fourth to try to secure the win. It wasn't enough this time, but I just have to respect the effort. Interesting stats for this game. Miami lost field goal percentage, going 40 of 97, good for 41%, to the Celtics 41 of 81, good for 51%. So, like has been mentioned before, a 10 percentage difference in field goal percentage, really hard to overcome. They also lost 3-point percentage. Miami going 12 of 40, good for 30%, to Boston 16 of 39, good for 41%. It really did feel like a game where, like, if Miami could have gotten a few, I mean, actually, well, literally down the stretch, if Miami could have gotten a few more threes, they could have ended up winning this game. So that was a big difference. Miami did do well in a bunch of other areas. Won turnovers 7-9 and points off of turnovers 15-10. Won offensive rebounding 14-6 and second chance points 23-19. Only barely lost free throw attempts going 14-15 to the Celtics 12-17. So they did make more free throws than the Celtics despite having less attempts. But in the end, they did not do enough in any of those areas to overcome the massive difference in field goal percentage. And ultimately, that's why they lost the game. And then for the mention here, give me my soapbox for a moment. And let me just officially say, for anybody that wasn't aware of this, that the Celtics and the Heat have a legit rivalry in this current era. Like, the cores of these teams have stayed the same for the last 4 or 5 years. They've met in the Eastern Conference Finals 3 of the last 4 years, and some of those series have gotten, like, real chippy and, like, memes thrown in each other kind of thing. Like, this is a rivalry. And when you have a rivalry like that, things are going to get chippy. And what I personally don't like about this is when it comes to players that get injured when these two teams play each other. And mainly, like, the scorekeeping that tends to prop up around it. So, for example, in the game yesterday, during one of the drives to the rim, Bam Adebayo socked Kristaps Porzingis in the nuts. And Porzingis went down for a little bit. I mean, if you're a guy and you've been hitting the nuts, you know how this goes. You need a few minutes to recover. It's not the worst thing, as long as you don't, like, pop him or anything like that. And sure enough, Kristaps Porzingis later on in the game. But, lo and behold, to no surprise, Celtics people on Twitter, oh, Bam's a dirty player, oh this, oh that. And then, later on in the game, you have Duncan Robinson and Jaylen Brown get their arms tangled up. And if you've watched basketball enough, you've seen players get their arms tangled up like this before. And then the play gets blown dead, and then they very nicely just take their arms out of each other and go their separate ways. Instead, Jaylen Brown did not like, I guess, that Duncan couldn't get his arm out and proceeded to twist his upper body in such a way that it could have legitimately ripped Duncan's shoulder out of its socket. So, from the scorekeeping perspective, does that make us even? Or do the Heat still owe the Celtics because Terry Rozier also got injured this game and Josh Richardson got a dislocated shoulder? Like, am I supposed to go back to those plays and, like, try to find where a Celtics player might have like, bumped Rozier in such a way that he had an awkward landing, and then I'm supposed to call that Celtics player dirty online? I just don't see what the positive comes out of this outside of just, like, increasing the hate between the fan bases when we're not even the ones that play each other. The players play each other, and then we just kind of piggyback off of it. I don't know. By all means, label me a bad Heat fan, because maybe I'm not necessarily sticking up for the fact that more Heat players got injured in this game. I just don't care that much to go tick for tack on, oh, who injured who? Who's the dirtier player? Nah. These are two teams that are rivals, and as a result of that, things get chippy and physical between them. If anything, then I appreciate it, because I know that these two teams give a damn playing each other. And the injuries are just an unfortunate byproduct of that. So, off the soapbox now, that will finish up the Celtics game. The Heat will go on the road before going to the All-Star break. Before we jump into that, let's first recap the trade deadline, or more specifically, the lack of anything that happened at the trade deadline. So, Miami made absolutely zero moves whatsoever. Nothing. Not even like, hey, they traded this player over here to, like, ease some protections or open a roster spot or try to get it to... Nah, it was... There was nothing going on. Not only just for the Heat, but more so the NBA in general. It was most, like, small moves around the fringes by the time the trade deadline ended up being finished. And looking back, it makes me essentially think that, like, the major moves have just been kind of spread out throughout the previous few weeks rather than usually happening right at the deadline like it does at previous years. So, for example, OG Anunoby to the Knicks happened, was it late December, early January? And then a few weeks back, Terry Rozier happened for the Heat. So those are, like, kind of some of the big moves that you would say happened in season, and they all happened several weeks before the trade deadline even finished. So for the Heat, they already got Rozier. Really, the only option, like I talked about last week, would have been trying to find some way to improve the four, or at least getting a little more size in the front court. And it just doesn't seem like there are any good options out there for Miami. So, I mean, it always takes two to tango. You can't just sit here and say, hey, can I give you my really bad assets and you'll give me a really good asset just because you like me, please? And it's not how it works in the NBA. But I do understand some other fans being a little bit disgruntled, because at least from like an optics perspective, like I don't think it's going to make a big on-court difference, but from an optics perspective, there were other teams in the East making moves, and so therefore it looks bad. So like the Sixers got another shooter in Buddy Hield, but they're still waiting several weeks to see what's going to happen with Embiid. And if Embiid ends up not coming back this season, well, that's their entire season. So what does that move end up being if Embiid isn't healthy? That's what I'm saying, right? Like, the optics of that at first look a little bad because, hey, the Sixers made a move. They brought in Buddy Hield. He didn't do anything. Yes, but the Sixers, their season could be dead. And even if it does come back, like, how healthy will Embiid be? How good will they all look together? Can the Sixers even get past the second round? That all still remains. Other moves around the East of potential note, the Milwaukee Bucks got a perimeter defender in Pat Beverly, since their defense continues to be pretty bad, at least from like a championship level standpoint. And let's see, Knicks added some more punch with Bogdan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks, though they are also dealing with a few injuries of their own with Jalen Brunson. Julius Randle, I think, might be about back. And I think Brunson was out like a week or so. Just to say that they are also dealing with the injuries. And then Celtics added some bench depth as well with, I was like, Xavier Tillman, I want to say. But who knows if he'll even play come playoff time. So again, that's what we're saying, right? A lot of these teams made moves, and these are all teams that Miami is kind of jostling around. But none of their moves really made, like, none of them are really a needle mover, if you get what I'm saying. So optically it looks bad, but realistically, kind of meh. though it does feel a little bit like the Heat did get left behind. So, with the trade deadline coming and going and not really being much of anything available, Miami will next look to the buyout market and try to hope that they strike gold again like they did last year when they picked up Kevin Love. But does need to be said, I don't expect much, because, again, like the Kevin Love thing, reason why I say it was striking gold, because it was. Lightning in a bottle is the other phrase you could use. That is an exception that proves the rule that you typically don't get anything out of the buyout market. And also, due to new rules regarding like the salary cap and like the first tax apron and the second tax apron and some stuff that are a little bit beyond me, so I'm leaning on experts here. Because the Heat are over the first luxury tax apron, they are a little bit restricted in their buyout market candidates. Specifically, they cannot go for a buyout candidate that was making more than $12 million that season. So like, for example, I think it was a Spencer Dinwiddie was making like $20 million or something like that this season. So even though he was bought out, the Heat cannot sign him because he was making $20 million and the Heat's limit is $12 million or below. So primarily looking at players that were making less than that. A few names that I thought of that could maybe be of interest. Marcus Morris. We did have his brother Markieff, though they didn't work out very well. But that was also in part because he got elbowed in the spine by Jokic. But they didn't really do a great job when he came back. Like, he wasn't a good locker room presence from what I remember. And then I think there might also be a salary concern with Marcus. Like, he might be over that $12 million budget. Just to say, though, that even if he isn't, the Heat, like, this isn't like a slam dunk. The Heat are automatically going to bring this guy in kind of thing. Next name, Danilo Gallinari. Heat did have interest in him a few years back. Was it the 2020 trade deadline? Yeah, they were trying to get Danilo Gallinari, but there was, like, contract disputes. Since then, Gallinari's not only gotten older, but he's gotten a little more injured. There's some mobility concerns, but the dude can score. And the Heat, for the most part, needs scoring, especially from the four or even the five, like if that's all you can play at this point. Last name I had here real quick was Victor Oladipo, just because of the previous history with Miami. However, he still has no timetable to return from the knee injury that made him leave the playoffs last year. So that and the Heat needing Well, they might need some guard depth now, given what happened with Jay Rich and Rozier. But at best, that would be like a patch job. And even then, since there's no timetable for return for Oladipo, he doesn't fit that specific short-term need. All this pretty much just to say, I would not expect much from the buyout market. I would not expect another Kevin Love, as much as I would love something like that to happen for the Heat, because that would at least be a meaningful addition. I think that they just have their team at this point, and whatever happens to the end of the season is going to happen. So with that, let's look ahead to next week now. So first, the injury report. Jimmy Butler will be out the rest of the week. He's been granted leave from the team. Again, death in the family. Wishing him and his loved ones all the best in their time of mourning. Josh Richardson, who apparently dislocated his shoulder in the Celtics game, will be reevaluated in a few weeks. I think it was like February 27th, but looked really painful. From what I heard, it popped back in at least, so hopefully it doesn't end up being anything long-term, especially considering that like Josh Richardson had a DNP a few weeks back and since then just really upped his level of play, so came at a rough time. And then Terry Rozier, arguably the more worrisome of the injuries. There was a little bit of debate at the time in that Celtics game whether it was the knee or the ankle that was injured. Spoelstra saying ankle at one time later on the broadcast, and then the Heat official statement after the game was knee. At the time of recording, there has still been no update. It did look bad. Like, he like grabbed it immediately. So worst case, yeah, that could have been a season-ending injury. But at the time of recording, no updates exactly how long that'll be. He's supposed to have gotten an MRI today, so I'd imagine that means x-rays came back clean for knee and ankle, and it's just a matter of like ligaments. So we'll have to see what the update is. I would imagine probably later on. And then, like I've mentioned before, Drew Smith is currently still out for the season. So you're starting to look at this and like, man, Drew Smith out for the season, Josh Richardson out several weeks, Terry Rozier probably out several weeks at best, and all of a sudden the Heat's point guard room looks very sparse again. So, that's the injury report. The plan for the Heat this week, they have a road back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday, and then they get the All-Star break. So, we will go first to Tuesday, where they will be at the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a Milwaukee Bucks team that currently has a 34-19 overall record, and the Heat are down 0-2 against them in a best-of-3. That was, like, the first game. They got blown out and then started to come back at the end. It was, what, like the third or fourth game of the season. And then the other time was, like, early December. It was a really great game. And then the Heat defense just collapsed in the fourth quarter. I think they gave up, like, 38-26 in the fourth quarter of that game. Something along those lines, and they end up losing it. So, Heat have not gotten a win against the Bucks, and since it's a best-of-three series, they already don't own the tiebreaker against them. Looking at the injury report for them, Middleton is likely out. And then Dame and Giannis are day-to-day, so they could maybe be out. But imagine that they would play still, especially against Miami. So players to watch out for, the two I just mentioned, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard. That's a really, really great 1-2 punch offensively. And like, you can just build your entire team around that. So everything is about slowing down those two. And if you can, you probably got a good chance of winning the game. Looking at stats for the Bucks, they are 4th in offensive rating, 18th in defensive rating. That's what I mentioned earlier, where they want to get like a Pat Beverly to try to see if they could get that from 18th defensive rating to maybe like 15th or 14th. And then they are 4th in pace. So things that the Bucks do well, for the good side of things. They're 3rd in field goal attempts while being 14th in field goal percentage. So, you know, that's pretty good offensive formula right there. Get a bunch of attempts up and shoot them at about a league average rate, so you'll just be positive from the increase in volume. 6th in three-point attempt rate, so they're taking a lot of their shots from three-point range to help keep things opened up for Giannis to operate inside. 2nd in two-point percentage, and 2nd in free-throw attempts, which that, again, you look at like Dame and Giannis and the work that they can do driving to the rim, getting to the line. Makes sense that they're really good in those two areas. Where they are bad at, 30th in opponent field goal attempts, while 17th in opponent field goal percentage. So this is where the things that they do well on the offensive end, they're also not doing as well on the defensive end, letting their opponents get a high volume and shooting above average on those attempts. Hence, defense has been bad. 23rd in personal fouls and 20th in opponent free throw attempts. That means as a team that Miami could try to exploit, get to the line a little bit more. They won't have Jimmy, but maybe like Bam, Hero, or even Jaquez could try to put like an emphasis on to get to the line. And storyline for this game. The Heat do have an outside chance to catch the Bucks. So at this time, the Bucks are only 6 games ahead of them. That's not an insurmountable by the end of the season. So can they cover up some ground here? Or at the very least, can they just avoid the season sweep to the Bucks? They couldn't do that against the Celtics. Celtics ultimately swept them 3-0. So it's about avoiding that same fate. And then after that game on Tuesday, the Heat will go on the road back-to-back, playing at the Sixers this Wednesday. This is a Sixers team that currently has a 31-21 overall record. Heat are up 1-0 in the best of 4 against them, so still got 2 more games after this. They won the one game, which was the Xmas Day game, where Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid sat. It was still a fun game, because like, it was like Maxi and Jaime Jaquez really balled out, or it was like Maxi struggled and Jaquez balled out. Something like that. It was a fun Christmas Day game, especially because the Heat won. But Heat up 1-0, best of 4. Looking at the injury report for the Sixers, both Embiid and Covington are for sure out. So that's not only their best player, but a solid perimeter player. With Nicholas Batum and Tobias Harris questionable due to injuries. So we'll see if they end up playing or not. Players to watch out for: Tyrese Maxey, who still, I think, has a great chance of winning Most Improved Player if he doesn't have that locked up. Have that looked at those recently. And then potentially Kyle Lowry if he is fully bought out and joins the Sixers. But I would imagine at this point, if it's already Monday and that hasn't happened, they probably don't try to incorporate Lowry until after the All-Star break. But all signs do point to Kyle Lowry going to the Philadelphia 76ers right now. Stats for the Sixers. Currently 6th in offensive rating, 12th in defensive rating, 14th in pace. So more offense-leading team. Makes sense with like Embiid and Maxey. For things that they do well, first in two-point attempts, first in free throw attempts, first in turnovers, and first in steals. So a lot of firsts there. Two-point attempts, free throw attempts make sense with Embiid, Maxey, Harris, just like the general construction of their team. First in turnovers. That one was very interesting to me. I guess just goes to show Maxey's a bit better at handling the ball and taking care of it than I'd originally imagined. And they've done a better job of limiting Embiid's turnovers by putting him in better positions, because he used to be a little bit of a turnover machine as well. And then first in steals just points to their defense. 6 in opponent turnovers, so they are probably going to try to win the turnover battle against the Heat. And 8th in offensive rebounding, so try to get a lot of second chance points. It'll be up to the Heat to box out well and, you know, really grab those defensive boards. Things that the Sixers do badly from a statistical standpoint: 25th in three-point attempts, 21st in three-point percentage. They're not winning this game by trying to bomb from three. They'll do that enough to try to keep the Heat honest, but they're not going to try to win that way. So if they end up bombing a ton from three and they don't convert a lot, don't be too surprised. 26th in personal fouls and 27th in opponent free throw attempts. So very similar to like with the Bucks, there is an area to exploit where the other team fouls a lot and sends the opponent to the free throw line a lot. Miami typically likes to do that. So again, Bam, Hero, Jaquez, especially Hero, like since he hasn't gotten a free throw this month, this would be a really great stretch to be like, hey, let me just try to get a few trips to the line. And then storyline for this game. So, usually the storyline is, what did the Heat have on the second night of a back-to-back? It's a little bit of a similar situation to last week, where the argument was is that, yes, you had a back-to-back, but you could just go all out against that Spurs team because you had multiple days of rest before the Celtics game on Sunday. It was like from Wednesday to Sunday, 3 days off. Even more so here. After that game on Wednesday, after this back-to-back, they have over a week off. So, by all means, go all out. These are against two conference rivals. Beat them. And then the other part for this Sixers, the storyline to watch, is can the Heat get this second win? Because And when you have a best of four series, if you go up 2-0, then at worst, it could be tied 2-2, and then it can go to other tiebreakers. And given the Heat can actually catch the Sixers, given this Embiid injury, that this could be huge to have the tiebreaker over the Sixers by the end of the season. Again, like, it could be the difference between being in the play-in and having... It could be the difference between the 7th seed and the 6th seed, being in the play-in versus being in the playoffs. That's how important getting this win could be. Especially given that the second tiebreaker after head-to-head is usually division winner. Yeah, it is division winner. So given that Miami is likely to win their division, then the Sixers will not win their division because they're in the same division with the Celtics, and the Celtics are definitely winning that. So Miami could essentially have the head-to-head tiebreaker just off of splitting this season series 2-2. So we want them to pick that up sooner rather than later. After that Sixers game on Wednesday, the Heat will enjoy the All-Star break, which is a phenomenal time for this team to get some much-needed rest, heal up some injuries here and there, maybe run some practice when they can or do some film sessions, and just get themselves ready for the post-All-Star break. But real quick, for All-Star weekend, just to go over who will be present for the Heat, Jaime Jaquez Jr. will be in both the Rising Stars game on, I believe that's Friday night, and he will also be in the dunk contest, should be Saturday night. So Jaquez is doing a good job representing Heat, and again, already in the Rising Stars, Heat really did luck out getting him at 18th, and that Portland didn't want to take any sort of calls or offers for Damian Lillard from the Heat. So therefore, the Heat get to keep Jaquez. And then Bam Adebayo will be going to the All-Star game for the Heat, third year in a row. Made it just off of the coach's decision, not like an injury reserve or anything like that. Love to see it. Like to see Bam get the recognition that he deserves for being one of the best players in the league. Even though the All-Star game itself is probably going to be a little bit of a snoozer. So, after that, the NBA will be taking an entire week off. The next game for the Heat isn't until the following Friday, a week from this Friday, which would be the 23rd of February. But I will still have an episode coming out next Monday where I'll go over these two games this week. One or two games to preview next week, since the way that my schedule works, it would still fall under that. And then next week, we will also talk about the standings, like another quick overview of the standings as Miami gets ready for the post-All-Star push to try to get out of the play-in again. Man, it feels like Groundhog Day. We're in the same spot as we were last year. But I do thank you for hanging around today. That'll be all for this episode. Please, if you can, follow the pod at Heaters Heating and myself at KBR Heat Culture off of X/Twitter. Also, check out the other great pods we have at OTG Basketball, Full Access Pacers, Celtics Lad Podcast, Brooklyn Buzz, still doing great work over there. Links for everything are in the show notes, as usual. I'll be back next week. So until then, hope you all have a great one, Heat Nation.